Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Well, Sarah Palin last night laid out a series of rants, some outright lies, some misleading statements. Pretty good job for the red meat in terms of she didn't fumble anything, she didn't blow it totally. Saying Obama's going to raise taxes when in fact he's going to lower taxes on 95% of Americans. Maybe she was speaking on behalf of the billionaires only. She says she didn't say in the speech, but she has said that she believes that we're in Iraq because it's God's will. She's got Troopergate. She's got the pork list. I mean, all these things that are coming up down the road. And in particular last night, I was really astounded, ABC, when the Democrats were during the Democratic National Convention, they had on Democrats and Republicans. They had Donna Brazile. This is for the DNC on Tuesday night of the DNC. They had Donna Brazile, Matthew Dowd, George Will. Tuesday night of the RNC, no Democrats, just Matthew Dowd and Tory Clark. And similarly, CBS. This is for the Tuesday night coverage. Again, this is a day late, but just looking at this, this is over at MediaMatters.org. With the Democrats, they had, in the Democratic National Convention, they had Republicans, Dan Bartlett and Mitt Romney commentating. And last night, there wasn't a single Democrat, or the night before last, not a single Democrat. We're still trying to get the numbers for tonight, for last night. So, it is bizarre, the corporate media. And one of the most brilliant observers of the corporate media in America, Katrina Vandenhoevel of The Nation, the editor-in-chief of The Nation, and part owner, publisher of The Nation, thenation.com, the website. Katrina, welcome.
Tom, it's great to be on with you.
It's always great to have you here, Katrina. Thanks so much for coming back on with us. As there is the as a woman part of this, I'm curious about your take on that, how you think American women are going to respond to her and the shots of the family and the baby and all that. The issue part of it, the political part of it, and it seems to me that what she did last night is she claimed populism, and we need to be very careful to put the word progressive back into progressive populism.
Couldn't agree with you more. I mean, what we saw last night, Tom, has quite a long lineage in our political history, modern political history. On our website, John Nichols, our Washington correspondent, is calling her Spiro Palin in reference to Spiro Agnew,
who
in
1968,
you know, when you don't have the issues on your side, bash the media. And Spiro Agnew, Pat Buchanan, who she supported, right-wing populist, have gone after the media. And the delicious, though disgusting, irony about this is that probably no one in American politics over the last 20 years has had a closer, warmer relationship with the elite corporate national press than John McCain, who just a few years ago called the media, the corporate media, my base. So they're trying to have it always, both ways, and they're trying to distract from the issues. And as a woman, as a media person, as an editor, Tom, I'm kind of old-fashioned. I like my politics with issues, and they're doing as darn good a job as they can to distract and to present her not as the extremist, the right-wing extremist she is on core issues, out of step with majority of Americans, but as the feisty kind of lifetime story with the family. And I think, you know, the Republicans, you know this, Tom, are pretty good at campaigning and doing so in a jugular, mean-spirited way. It's the governing that has left this country in a ruinous condition.
And they're very good at packaging as well.
Absolutely. I mean, the packaging is, you know, it's cynical, it's symbolic, and as you know, Tom, I'm sure you've been talking about this. I mean, they're pretty transparent about it. Rick Davis, McCain's campaign manager, is talking about, you know, this campaign is not about the issues. It's about, this election is about a composite view of what people take away from these candidates.
Yeah, it truly is. And this is, by the way, there's a variety of other topics on the ground here that I'd love to get your take on. I am seeing, I'm watching Minnesota media, the television when I get back to my hotel room. I listen to the radio as we're driving around. Every opportunity I get, I'm trying to catch both local and national media. And, you know, I personally witnessed four police officers smash a kid's head into the ground a couple of times. We had Amy Goodman on this program for a full hour day before yesterday with two of her producers talking about what they experienced. We're seeing a lockdown police state activity here in St. Paul that is truly horrific. Over 400 arrests, people, you know, crashing into people's houses simply because they were planning on documenting, video documentaries of what's going on here. There is no coverage. I mean, I watched this morning. I woke up in the hotel room and for an hour as I was getting ready to come in, you know, was watching Morning Joe on MSNBC. No mention of this at all. It's like there's a media blackout about the police state in the city.
Well, I mean, you don't hear that from the Republicans who are bashing the quote elite media. What you know, the Republicans are not interested in the true role of a pro-democracy media in a democracy, which is to be a critical watchdog in a democratic society. The nation, you know, has not only called for dropping the charges against Amy Goodman, one of the most fearless journalists in our country, and her two producers, but in general, the crackdown shows how badly out of whack our society is in terms of balancing freedom and security. And it is really a travesty that our taxpayer dollars are being used to suppress dissent and arrest journalists at conventions that should be true celebrations of our small d democracy.
We're talking with Katrina Vandenhoevel, the editor and publisher of the Nation, the website thenation.com, and be sure to check that out. And Katrina, I mentioned this yesterday. I incorrectly attributed it to Lao Tzu. It was Sun Tzu, who in his Art of War said that one of the most important things you must do is convince your enemy that your greatest strength is actually your greatest weakness, so your enemy will not go after that. For the better part of 20 or 30 years now, and arguably even longer than that, but you know, aggressively in a way that is being used for political purposes, the media in this country has been owned by corporations and politicians who are, you know, wholly owned subsidiaries of the Republican Party, or the Republican Party is a wholly owned subsidiary of the military-industrial media complex, and yet they complain constantly about being the underdogs, of being, you know, of there being a liberal media out there. I mean, sure, there is a liberal media. It's your magazine and it's my show, but
right.
Where else is it?
No.
Where else is it?
This is, you know, but this is a classic. It's part of a kind of, you know, let's play the quote elite card, and it is faux populism. You know, Paul Krugman, a smart columnist for the New York Times, wrote many moons ago that if this election becomes, you know, an election of faux outrage over false scandals, false issues, you know, we're in trouble. And the Republicans know that because they don't have the issues on their side. It's not simply that they have a country which is turned against a Republican Party, which has had essentially the keys to the Republic for these last years. Mitt Romney last night was like in a time warp. I don't know which country he was talking about as he bashed the liberal D.C. political.
Mitt Romney, whose company Bain Financial now owns Clear Channel, by the way.
Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah, no, I mean, and so you, and then, you know, the other thing I found, The scorn for community organizing last night was something to watch. I mean, what strikes me is, let's take Sarah Palin for a moment, and our D.C. editor Chris Hayes has a good post on our website right now about community organizing. He did a forum with some leading community organizers on the eve of the Democratic Convention. But just take the issue that she spoke about last night, needs, special needs children, and how important it is to address their condition and needs. You know, decades before the American Disability Act and a raft of other legislation, schools had essentially no requirements to provide decent education for special needs children. A movement of parents engaging in community organizing changed that.
But you know what's happening?
So, you know, but what they're doing is using every possibility to, you know, debase and...
They're going to reinvent this word, Katrina, mark my words, just like they reinvented liberal as anti-patriot or traitor or something.
No, you're
they're
right.
Going to reinvent community organizing as getting together those scary black folks.
Yep. No, there's no question that the code last night, Tom, was also something to behold. Because though I mentioned Pat Buchanan earlier, his speech in 1992 at the Republican convention was frontal in terms of its attack on radical feminism, on sort of mirages of his imagination. And Molly Ivins, the incredible Molly Ivins, had a wonderful line. She said she enjoyed Pat Buchanan's speech more in the original German. But Sarah Palin didn't need to do that last night. She could speak in code about issues that the base, which she so rallied.
And they all got it. They all got it. Katrina Vandenhoevel, thenation.com. Thank you, Katrina.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Thing out. What happened last night? Was this a turning point for the Republican Party? Is this a great new moment? Has this energized the party? Did Sarah Palin do everything she needed to do? Is she the bright star, shining star, or is she Spiro Agnew? Is she the unknown governor who has been up to our eyeballs in corruption for some time, who will say anything and often contradicts her own positions in order to get elected? And has a closet full of scandals in the background and will not perhaps last through the campaign and may not last through the presidency. Is this a woman who 2 years ago her most serious decisions were whether or not to sell somebody an ice fishing ticket or what time to close the town dump? At the same time that Joe Biden, if we're looking to vice president, at the same time that Joe Biden was facing down Slobodan Milosevic and telling him he was a war criminal and making sure that he got into the Hague. Barack Obama has a degree in international relations. He's a constitutional scholar. Neither John McCain nor Sarah Palin have any formal training in the law or the Constitution. I think we have some interesting contrasts here, some very interesting contrasts. 866-303-2270, your number. Alan in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Alan, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, when you were talking earlier, you mentioned ABC about watching the broadcast, and it tipped me off in my brain here. Last week, when the Democratic National Convention was going about in the Pittsburgh area, our TV station, ABC, CBS, NBC, didn't broadcast it. You had a hunt for it. I had to watch it on TBS or CNN or Fox. The RNC, it's been on every station. You can't avoid it. And, I mean, Pennsylvania, it's tough to keep this state Democrat a Democratic state, because it seems like the Republicans have so much more going on in the media. This media.
Now, the media is Republican-owned, and in those places where you get, media that is progressive, the rare progressives, I mean, there is almost 1,000 conservative radio stations in the United States running 24/7 conservative rants. They're in the neighborhood of 60 to 70.
We just lost you this week, Tom.
It's not just me. It's me and Lynn Cullen. I mean, the entire station.
We lost our progressive voice in Pittsburgh.
Because a group of wealthy Republican businessmen came in and said, "Oh, we're going to flip this thing business."
This is
the same thing a year ago in Atlanta. There was a group of Christian businessmen who got together and said, "Okay, let's buy the Air America station and run Christian infomercials all day. We don't care if it makes money. We just want to get the progressive voice off the air in Atlanta." And they did. And so to say that the media is liberal is absurd. Alan, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. John in Nebraska. Hey, John, you want to disagree with me?
Oh, no, I didn't want to disagree with you, Tom. I just, my comment is this. I've been listening, and I don't usually listen to this channel, but I've got the Sirius satellite. I've been listening consistently pretty much since last Thursday, every the hour that it takes for me to get to work and back. And I have to say that all the comments that I've been hearing from your listeners, from a lot of the hosts on here, pretty much all of them, does my conservative Christian heart good to know that you guys are ticked off and you're scared, and I'm wondering which emotion is going to be more prevalent when you guys go to the poll in November.
Yeah, we really are very concerned about the future of this country. We've seen the Constitution trashed. We've seen the Fourth Amendment shredded. We've seen posse comitatus attacked, actually stripped right out of the law. This is a law that was passed in the 1870s. We've seen habeas corpus, the right to face your accusers, something that is written into the Constitution in two different places that was dear to the founders. It started in 1015, taken out of the Constitution. We've seen, you know, such blatantly unconstitutional acts that a right-wing Supreme Court three times has struck down what the Bush administration has been doing. We see John McCain going exactly down that same road. We see 100,000 at least civilian deaths, perhaps as many as 500,000 to a million innocent people dead as the consequence of a war that was based on lies. Ron Suskind now coming out with his book documenting the fact that after the fact, the Bush administration phoning up memos to try to justify this war that was based on lies, 4,000 Americans dead, 4.5 million refugees from Iraq, the largest refugee crisis in the world. I would agree with you, John. We are angry about the fact that our country is being ruined over the last 30 years. The middle class has been destroyed as a consequence of conservative economics and Reaganomics. We're seeing the ruining of the middle class. People no longer have pensions. People no longer have health care. You guys have destroyed this country, and I think that we are justified in being angry and, frankly, justified in being worried that if this election is won by John McCain and Sarah Palin, that it's going to be four more years of the same. And how much can this country take? We've gone from being the biggest creditor nation in the world to the biggest debtor in the nation.
Tom, I understand everything you're saying, but the fear and the anger that I'm hearing being ticked off is the anger that, number one, Sarah Palin is now in there, and the woman that you guys wanted, Hillary Clinton, is not in there. And the scared, because of the fact that he didn't pick what everybody thought was going to be Mike Huckabee or Romney, a ticket that you guys thought you could defeat. I think it's very interesting. When Barack Obama's family was being shown on the TV, his wife, Michelle, every time he says something, the camera goes to her. Family values is great.
You know, it's very interesting, John. Sarah Palin's mentor said that he hates the government of the United States of America. Is that going to be played on loop 8 days in a row? Somehow I doubt it. Somehow I very, very seriously doubt it, John. Ain't going to happen. We'll play it here next if you'd like to hear it, but I don't think it's going to happen in the corporate media. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is Tom Hartman. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you in part by the Service Employees International Union, SEIU, and their millions of members. SEIU did such a great gig here. Day before yesterday, I was so honored to speak in front of 30,000 people about the Employee Free Choice Act. SEIU.org, of course, their website. 1-866-303-2270. Is our telephone number. We're taking your calls on your thoughts on what happened last night and just, you know, in general, you know, what's going on here with the GOP and whatnot. Joe in St. Paul, Minnesota, listening to our web stream. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hey, Tom, I appreciate your show. Really do.
Thank you.
Say, this is just a thought I had as I listened to the pundits and everybody. You know, they say that Sarah Palin, lacks experience. And the right even says that Barack Obama lacks even greater experience. But yet, I've heard through the pundits that you know, come the time that Biden, you know, meets up with Palin, that he should maybe go easy on her since he's so experienced. And what my thought was, you know, why is it, and this is a question I guess to ask the right, is why is it then that John McCain, having more experience than Barack Obama, why wasn't it said that he should go easier on Barack than, you know?
Well, I don't think anybody's going to go easier on anybody, and you know, these are pundit and pontificator talking points or ideas or whatever. The bottom line is what they're doing is they're trying to say that running something, you know, I've run a bunch of businesses in my life. I have arguably 30 years or more of executive experience, where I was the chief executive officer or the president of a company.
Okay.
And ran things. And they're saying that senators don't have executive experience because they don't run things. Well, actually, senators do have executive experience. They run a fairly large staff. They run campaigns. They have run things. And beyond that, you know, Sarah Palin as the governor of Alaska for 22 months, you know, I'm not sure that if the Middle East is melting down, if we've got a situation where we're at the verge of war with Iran, we've got a situation where we may be going into war with Russia. I mean, this is serious stuff. This
is
serious
Tom. It is.
Stuff.
It is. But can I ask one question that was part of my so you don't believe that John Biden or Joe Biden
so
easy on
No, I don't think so. I think he's fighting for his life. I don't think he's gonna, you know, engage in personal attacks or pick on her family
No.
Do anything, you know, gratuitous. But he's gonna be tough. Joe Biden knows how to be a tough debater.
Hey, thanks a lot, Tom, for taking my call.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks a lot, Joe, for the call. Good to hear from you. Krista in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Krista, what's up?
Hi, I just had a few comments to make, and then I have a question for you.
Sure.
As a female voter, I am a mother of two daughters, I own my own business, and I struggle to make family time. Mm-hmm. And so it just irritates the heck out of me that all these comments about how a woman, you know, that the woman and man thing is different. And it is, because the mother's role is a lot more important to me, and I can't see how she, in good conscience, can do this to her family. I mean,
yeah, where are the Anita Bryant types who 10 years ago were excoriating women who wanted to who wanted to have it both ways? They wanted to have a family and work. How dare they? They're
you know,
all applauding
Sarah
Palin.
Yeah, I have no problem. I mean, I am all for women empowerment, and I was a Hillary supporter until I found out more about Barack Obama. But I think you have to draw the line. And I think she should have put her family first before she decided to do this, especially to her 17-year-old daughter.
Yeah. My opinion on this is very, very mixed, Krista. If she really, truly believes that she has a gift or an ability or a quality that can help improve the quality of life of Americans and the world, and she can figure out a way to bring her family into this. I mean, let's keep in mind, Jack Kennedy had young children in the White House. Jimmy Carter had a relatively young daughter in the White House. Bill Clinton had a relatively young daughter in the White House. And although they weren't mothers, they were fathers. But they were still parents. I think that it is possible, and I think you're going to hear a lot of Republicans actually taking a position that's completely the opposite of what they've been taking for the last 50 years, that it is possible for her to juggle both of these, particularly if her husband is willing to be a stay-at-home dad. The problem is all the evidence that we're seeing is that her husband hasn't been willing to be a stay-at-home dad, and she hasn't been willing to be that much of a mother. And in fact, there's, you know, some quotes of both of them kind of bragging about how they're farming out their kids, or at least her husband bragging about farming out the kids, about the time that her daughter got pregnant. So, you know, it's raising some questions, I suppose, in some. I'm not, you know, not being a mother and not being a woman, although I am a father, I'm a little wary to go there. I'd rather stay on the issues. But I get your point, and it's well said. Thank you. Thank you very much for the call.
Okay, and I have one more question for you.
Sure.
What do you think the Republicans would do to the Democratic Party if the roles were reversed here?
What do you mean?
Well, if it was our vice president pick that had was under investigation and had a 17-year-old daughter that was pregnant. What do you think the Republican Party?
They'd be eating our lunch. I mean, they'd be screaming. They'd be howling from the rooftops. It would be another example of liberal values run amok. You know, the failure of families. I mean, in fact, there's a great quote. Let me see if I'm pretty sure I've got it here. Yeah, here it is. This was edited by Proud to Be Lib over at Democratic Underground, but it originated with Thomas Shaler over at Salon.com. He said, "What's galling is this: when the subject is a pregnancy to an unwed minority teenage mother growing up in some presumably Democratic urban area, that pregnancy becomes fodder for lectures from conservatives about bad parenting, the perils of welfare spending, and so on. But when the subject is a pregnancy to an unwed white teenager from some small town in a Republican state, that pregnancy is a celebration of the wonders of God's magnificence and choosing life." And I think that summarizes it quite well. Chris, you got to move along. Thank you very much for your comments. I appreciate it. Bill in Hillsborough, New Jersey. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Tom. A little nervous calling you, and I'll tell you we miss you in the New York market. No one has brought up the Alaska State Legislature. If you go to their website, only has a 60 working day session.
Per year,
yes. They meet from mid-January to...
Well, there's only 600,000 people. I mean, when I lived in Vermont, it was the same thing. Vermont legislators are paid, I think, $17,000 a year. It's a part-time job.
Exactly, and I think that should be brought up. And last night, she didn't mention her degree. If you go to Wikipedia...
Which is in journalism.
Yeah, it says it's in journalism. I suspect broadcast journalism.
Well, she wanted to be a sports reporter. In fact, she was a sports reporter.
She was, which makes her comfortable in front of the cameras,
right.
Which is why she was able to give a decent speech last night.
Yeah. She's got a high Q factor. I mean, she looks good on television.
Yes, exactly. And I think I would describe that she was like an extreme radical right evangelical spokesmodel who delivers someone else's words effectively.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of like the Fox News babes, I guess, is the phrase
that
one of the Fox commentators actually put on them a couple of years ago that kind of stuck. Bill, thank you very much. Well said. Nancy in Alsea, Oregon. Hey, Nancy.
Hi, Tom. I'm a KPOJ listener.
Oh, great. Great. Thank you so much for listening to AM 620 KPOJ. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, I was distressed after the speech last night. I was very disturbed by it. Although I didn't like it, I was worried that it would play well with other people, and I was a little worried and upset. One of the things that I did last night is I was, as I was looking at the web and reading about the speech, I saw on the comments section on the CNN website that there were about 250 comments about the Palin speech, and 95% of them were knocking it. Now, this wasn't Daily Coast. This was the CNN site. People said they thought it was mean. They thought it was mean-spirited, that she was rude, that she was disrespectful. And there were independents on there who said that they were going to Obama.
I don't think America is. Yeah, I don't think America is with them. And the thing to do, if you were offended by the speech last night, or you're concerned about the speech last night, or as our conservative caller said, even if you were afraid by the speech last night that she might get some traction, go over to BarackObama.com and toss $25 their way. $50.
Oh, I did more than that, Tom. I gave $100 to Barack Obama. I gave $25 to the DNC. I gave $25 to the DSCC. $25 to the DSCC. And $25 to Jeff Merkley. And we are not rich, believe me. That was a stretch, but we're going to tighten our belt. And then this afternoon, I'm going down to Corvallis to the Barack Obama headquarters, and I'm going out to register voters or canvass and knock on doors or do something. It's the one thing that makes me feel a little better.
Yep, that's the appropriate response, Nancy. Despair is not an option. Anger, frankly, I don't think is an option. I don't think anger is a particularly useful emotion in this situation. But all of those very strong feelings that come up in all of us as we look at what's going on, at how the country's going down the tubes, is how the lies are being perpetuated. We need to convert all of that emotional energy into a positive action. And you are the poster child for that. You have done so well. Yeah, so good on you, Nancy.
I have one more comment, Tom. Wasn't Martin Luther King a community organizer?
Yes, Martin Luther King was. And that was my point, is they're trying to reinvent, quote, community organizer as the one who brings together the black folks, look out white folks. That's what they're doing. They're reinventing the word community organizer, just like they reinvented the word liberal as something scary. Mark my words, by 60 days from now, community organizer will be a word that many Democrats will be running from. Ancy, thank you very much for the call. John Nichols is here sitting with me. John and I are going to continue taking your phone calls, and I'd love to get his thoughts on what's going on in the world as well. 45 minutes past the hour.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at HartmanRadio.com.
Brought to you in part by the Teamsters, supporting the Employee Free Choice Act. You can learn all about it over at Teamsters.org. John Nichols is with us. TheNation.com, one of his favorite places to be writing, although the author of multiple books and articles, just, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah,
blog.
Yeah, there you go. You can Google John Nichols or whatever you want. John, let's just pick up some phone calls.
But you bet.
Before we do that, I'd just like to get your snapshot of last night.
Sarah Palin is their rock star. I mean,
she's their Obama. She's the one who'll pull 20,000 people into a stadium.
And, you know, John McCain was having to show up at biker rallies to get a crowd, right?
Right.
The fact of the matter is, since they put her on the ticket, the doors are blown off. And what she's doing is she is bringing their base, just as the Democratic Party has a liberal, progressive base that's out there. We know it's there, and they really do the heavy lifting. The Republican Party's base is an anti-choice, social conservative base.
Right.
And they are out. They're taking days off to go to the rallies, to volunteer. And we have to understand that, because this rewrites the political narrative of the most unexpected, untraditional presidential election year in our history. It rewrites it one more time, and I do think that we have to realize that issues like abortion are now front and center, much more so than we ever expected they would be this year.
Yeah. My blog today over at TomHartman.com, why does Sarah Palin continue to lie unchallenged about being in favor of the Bridge to Nowhere before she was opposed to it? Why did Wasilla rarely receive any earmarks before she became the mayor, and then all of a sudden millions of dollars in federal funds?
This is a town with 49 employees and a D.C. lobbyist.
Right, exactly.
You know,
tied to Jack Abramoff.
Let's be the truth of the matter is Sarah Palin's getting a very free ride for all, and they're doing the smartest thing they can do. This is an old Republican trick: attack the media for doing its job.
Exactly.
And we have the wimpiest media in the world in America.
Well, no, we've got the corporate media.
No, but we have the wimpiest media. We have a wimpy media, and the fact of the matter is you pick on them, you attack them a little bit, and
they run.
They go soft. They were very soft.
Why did she sit in her church just 2 weeks ago when her pastor delivered an anti-Semitic speech?
Yep. Jews for Jesus.
Yeah. Why did the McCain campaign stress her command of the National Guard when she never gave a single order to the National Guard in Alaska? Never issued a single order. Mm-hmm. Why did the people sit with? Why did the American people sit with their claims that American soldiers have been sent to God, quote, on a task that is from God, end quote? Why is she involved with the Alaskan independence movement and their statements that they hate America? I mean, it just goes on and on. Mm-hmm. Anyway, John Nichols with us. Let's take some phone calls here. And see what you think. Bill in Arizona, you're on the air with Tom and John.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, I'm going to give you a couple quick observations. First of all, I'm an independent. I think Rush Limbaugh is the loudest mouth in America. Is a joke. But I kind of got to go with you as number two. I'm listening, you know, I'm kind of listening to several different stations and
I noticed on the call screen here that you were going to disagree with me. I wasn't, you know, attacking me personally, though, really doesn't go very far, Bill. Do you have something to say of any substance?
Yes, I do. The reason I'm saying that is it just seems like the Democratic Party, I was really hoping to go for Obama this year, but I don't see it. I don't see, and a lot of independents feel the way I do, that they don't want to vote for a man that's going to take oaths with a Koran. They're not going to sit there and...
I didn't hear what he said.
He's going to take his oath on a Koran.
That he's going to take his oath on the Koran. Bill, you know, I'm really sorry to inform you, but this guy's not a Muslim. He's a Christian.
Yeah, and he was not raised a Muslim. He's a hardcore Christian. You know, he's the guy who actually takes it very, very seriously.
Bill is confusing him with Keith Ellison.
Well, you know, my biggest concern about Barack Obama is, you know, I actually think there is some concern there. This guy is very deeply Christian, and that wall of church and state is something. I'm glad he's a constitutional lawyer as well. Let's just say that.
Yeah, but he has come out in favor of faith-based initiatives, which gave me the creeps. And this, we're talking Barack Obama.
We are talking about Barack Obama here. Let's be very clear.
You know, but Keith Ellison,
if he did say his oath on the Quran, he might want to check Thomas Jefferson's Quran out of the Library of Congress.
As Keith Ellison did. Yes. Keith Ellison is the African-American from Minnesota, a member of Congress, who's mm-hmm. been on the show a number of times, who actually, and you don't take your oath on a Bible or a Quran anyway. You take it by holding your hand up. But it's a photo op afterwards. And it was Keith Ellison who did that.
Can I tell you, too, the second Muslim member of Congress, from Andre Carson, I believe, from Indianapolis, mm-hmm. he took his symbolic oath, and they asked him, did you do it on the Quran, because he's a Muslim? And he said, nope, Constitution. And he held up a copy of the Constitution.
There you go, just like Dennis Kucinich, always carrying one.
Perhaps maybe they all should say it on the Constitution.
I would appreciate that. Alfonso in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hey, Alfonso.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. You know, the guy that just came before me is part of the reason why I'm so scared about mm-hmm. this election.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about the code that Katrina VandenHeuvel was referring to. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand how one person who's from the south side of Chicago and has parents that aren't college educated, comes from a working class background, but through her own merit and hard work, gets through Princeton and Harvard Law School, and another guy who's raised by a single mother on food stamps, gets through Columbia and Harvard Law and gets what's arguably the most prestigious honor in all of American law schools, which is heading up the Harvard Law Review.
Yeah, we have just a few seconds, David. But you're describing, of course, Michelle and Barack Obama.
Yeah, Alfonso, by the way. It seems like these would be great American stories if their skin color wasn't something else. How can you describe these people as elite? How can the Republicans get away with that if it's not just
elite? They can get away with it because they use racist code. They have a long history of using racist code. This is the Lee Atwater strategy. This is the Richard Nixon strategy.
They do it because it works.
That's right.
They do it because it works. And one thing to be very conscious of, speaking of code last night, she was taking stuff right out of Rush Limbaugh, this sort of reference to Obama as the Messiah, the notion that he was a false Messiah. They're pushing this hard.
John Nichols, TheNation.com.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the second hour of our show. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio, airamerica.com, tomhartman.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room, see our live video stream here from the Republican National Convention in the police state of St. Paul, Minnesota. A fine place to be as long as you're not thinking about videotaping anything the police may be doing. Don't even think about it, because they will break down your doors, throw you to the floor, put a gun in your face, and the media will not talk about it. I'm just waiting for the day that they replace the C in America with a K. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. I think Ron Reagan's going to drop by in a few minutes. We'll get his thoughts on what's going on as well. Regina in Oakland, California, listening on Green 960. Hey, Regina, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you.
Just want to say the October surprise that I think is not getting attention is, why has Cheney been to Georgia twice this month?
Right, he's there right
the
now.
War drums. And I feel after the final debate, they're going to pull this stuff about Russia, the boogeyman with America, and McCain will be the man to keep us safe.
Right, and Sarah Palin's where this
right.
will, you know, if Iran blew up, I think it would work to the disadvantage of Palin. Because
right.
she has no knowledge of the Middle East whatsoever.
Right.
But if Russia blows up, the talking point, and we've already heard this talking point now from virtually every Republican who's gotten in front of a camera in the last 48
right.
hours, is her state is the closest to Russia. She's
That's
right,
right
next door to Russia. She knows what's going on with Russia, even though she doesn't. You know, she's been a hockey mom and the mayor of a town of 5,000 people. But, you know, that's how they're going to spin it.
How do Biden and Barack stop this now and start talking about it on the offense?
They have to get out in front of it.
Pardon?
Regina, they have to get out in front of it. They need to be talking about it. And thank you for calling in and raising the point. The other thing that they have to get out in front of is community organizing. They need to get out to the Midwest where the remnants of the Grange movement are, where there are community organizers who are middle-aged, overweight, white farmers. You know, not to go too hard on the caricature, but, you know, I grew up with these folks in Michigan. And let's get a bunch of community organizers who are, because there are community organizers all over the country. It's got nothing to do with race. And I'm telling you, within 72 hours, the Republican spin machine will have those two words, that phrase, community organizer, redefined as organizing the black folks. And every time somebody says, yes, Barack Obama was a community organizer, it's going to be one of those things that frightens the frightenable white people across the United States. And they need to get out in front of that, too, and make it very clear that community organizer is a good thing. You know, if anybody from the Obama campaign is listening, within 24 hours, you need to have commercials on television nationwide about community organizing that have white faces in them. That don't, you know, it's fine to have a few black faces in there, but make it very clear. Community organizing is not about race, because that is how the Republicans are spinning it. They are trying to say that community organizing is a racial thing. It's not. 866-303-2270. Alan in Miami. Hey, Alan.
Well, they have the conservative attack dog out there, and it's a woman.
Yep.
And the thing is, one of the problems is how this whole thing is conceptualized, and I see it on a couple of levels. On the first level, and George Lakoff just wrote an article that appears in tikkun.org about we're missing the fact that we're the people who are opposed to what Palin is representing are attacking her on the issues. And this isn't about issues. This is about cognitive stuff. This is about impressions.
It's about heart, not head.
Yeah, and that's what they're going for. And it has Karl Rove written all over it, of course. But the problem is that in some ways the Democrats have pinned themselves into a corner for the following reason, because they were trying so hard to play this family thing and run away from the issues, run away from impeachment, run away from the lying of the war, not attacking what the real policy problems, not talking about the destruction, all the things you talk about, destruction of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, habeas corpus, the whole thing, because they stayed away from that. They no longer have that in their arsenal at a time when they're being attacked on the very grounds they ran to, which is family.
I know. This is, you know, and you're singing to the choir here. You're singing to the choir. But I have been ranting about how the Democrats need to be saying, they need to be strong on these issues. They need to stand up for the Constitution. They need to become the party of the Constitution once again. And they need to be attacking the Republicans on this. And Barack Obama, for example, when he voted for FISA, took a big arrow out of his quiver and threw it and broke it in half and threw it away.
And the other thing they don't understand is that there's no point in trying to argue the hypocrisy of the right. It's not about hypocrisy. The fact is they see it as this is a war going on, a moral war.
And it has to be framed as who loves America. And the Republicans don't love America. They love the almighty dollar.
Well, you know, the country has pneumonia, and the Democrats are pretending that we have a cold. The fact is that they have to be attacked on destroying the country, as you say. And it's a very difficult thing to prove. And these people are doing it. They're willing to lie. They're willing to, they don't forget about the pregnancy. All of this doesn't mean anything to them because they are little loyal soldiers in the war against the evil liberals.
Yeah. And tragically, after 30 years of demonization of the liberal values that George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, you know, created this country on, they have succeeded in demonizing that. Although I think, frankly, America is waking up to the fact that the liberal values of this country that Dwight Eisenhower ascribed to, you know, held to, the idea of a progressive income tax, the idea of Social Security, that those liberal values actually are American values.
I'm not so sure that it is about values. This is about we have to recognize, right, this is about a takeover of our government and our way
yes.
of life.
No, we had a
coup d'état. Fighting like we are. Like we have an enemy out there. I mean, we really do. The enemy is inside, and we're pretending that it's not so. I personally,
it's a fifth column. We had it. We had a coup d'état in 2000. I mean, a judicial coup d'état. Absolutely, Alan. I got to move along, but you, very well said. Thank you, David in Syracuse, New York. Hey, David.
How are you?
WNYY. Just great. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. Listening to the speech last night, there were a few things that you know. In talking about how they want to win a war, we want to read our enemies their rights.
Right. That was a line that was, by the way, used against John Kerry and against Al Gore as well. And,
yeah, we're either in
the
laws or we're not.
Right.
And, they seem to be, you know, kind of glossing over that. I think we need to really put this pregnancy issue aside completely. It's a smokescreen. It's detracting from the real issues that we have to look at, and one of them
I agree.
Is
I've left it behind.
We have to look at things like her lack of experience. Now, about 3 weeks ago, Karl Rove was on Face the Nation, and he was talking about Obama looking at Tim Kaine as being on his short list, and he was saying, well, he's only been a governor for three years. Before that, he was mayor of the 105th smallest city in the country. And he said anybody who would do that would take political expedience over the best thing for the nation. And then they turned around and did exactly the same thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And very well pointed out, David. Hey, one of my favorite people in the world. Honest to God, one of my favorite. Seriously, in the whole world.
In the entire world, not the universe, but
no, not the universe.
Okay.
Well, we don't know the universe, but Ron Reagan is sitting here with me, and Ron, I've been on your show when you were on the air in Seattle.
Yes,
you've been on my show a couple times,
mm-hmm.
and we hung out together. Where was that?
Seattle.
A couple
right.
of weeks ago,
doing a panel discussion there.
Yep, and we have a guest room with your name on the door. If you ever get down to Portland,
I appreciate it. Likewise, up in Seattle.
Thank you. We'd love to have you come. Your take on what happened last night?
Well, there's no doubt that that Sarah Palin energized the base here in the hall. I'm not sure how that base energy, if you will, is going to play outside of the hall. And I suspect that she also may have energized John McCain's old base, that being the media, by insulting
right.
them again and again and again. I was walking by the MSNBC setup outside the hall after her speech, and Rachel was making some very good points about the speech, which you would expect. But Brian Williams himself was quoting from a Joe Klein blog that was already truth-squatting the speech, and there is a lot there.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever else you want to say about that speech, there was a ton of dishonesty.
She lied about taxes. She lied about oil. She lied. I mean, it's
lied about her own position once again on the bridge to nowhere.
Right.
We now know that she supported that. And
right.
she has now repeatedly told the lie that she was against it, and that she told Washington no thanks.
Yeah.
Well, that's flat out a lie. And I think that they're going over the top here with this. Common, you know, that this is the old playbook of the Republican Party. You get in trouble, you blame the media. It's, you know, don't pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. And I have a feeling from what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing from people, the media is going to start pushing back. And Sarah Palin's going to have to get outside the bubble here eventually.
Yeah.
And she's going to have to answer some questions. And that's going to be difficult for her.
You know, John Nichols' take on it is that she's Spiro Agnew.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think there's a lot to be said for that. You've got a corrupt, unknown governor, and she is a corrupt, unknown governor, and coming in with a cloud of suspicion hanging over her. I believe that they're going to successfully push back beyond November 4th any serious investigation. She's already said that she will not be available. You know, the House of Representatives in Alaska has already tried to subpoena her. I'm sorry, she's not going to be available until after the elections.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll
right.
fly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then of course you got the National Enquirer up there just you know running around like rabbits in a lettuce patch, and it's you know so far you know did she have an affair? Well, yeah, at a certain level I don't care, but I have a feeling that the NASCAR crowd, and I don't mean that in a negative way, frankly. Mm-hmm. I mean these are the folks I grew up with. The middle America will care that the salacious tabloid stuff actually is probably more important to them than her opinion on the Middle East.
And apparently she didn't have much of an opinion on the Middle East.
Right.
I'm not sure she could locate it on a map. I don't.
Well,
know
she was in Kuwait once, I think.
Yes,
and,
that's right.
And
the
Republicans,
the Alaskan
that's
National
right.
Guard.
That's right. Well, actually, the fact of the matter is she's never ever given a command to the Alaskan National Guard. And what was so outrageous, day before yesterday, the Republicans were saying, and she's also visited Europe. Well, you know, she changed planes in the Shannon Airport on her way back from Kuwait. She changed planes in Shannon, Ireland. She's been to Europe.
Yeah.
Ron Reagan with us. Ron, let's take some calls together.
Sure.
You up for it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, here we are. Tom Hartman with you. Tom Hartman radio program. Ron Reagan with us here on Air America Radio. AirAmerica.com for our live webcam. Well, maybe we can get Justin to move the webcam so we can see both of us. And 866-303-2276. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Think so. 30 years of Republican destruction of the United States of America, and finally we have an opportunity to take it back in a real and significant way. We got to make it happen. Ron Reagan here with me, Tom Hartman on Air America Radio. 23 minutes past the hour. Welcome back to our show. 866-303-2270. Let's take a few calls here, Ron. Let's start out with a guy who says he disagrees with me. Those are always fun.
I like those best too. Actually.
Ken in Portland, you're on the air.
Me?
You, sir. Yes,
yeah.
Indeed, Ken.
Well, what I would say is that I was watching it last night. The speech is a masterpiece, and you'd better get in there and find out a trump for every ace that she dealt, because the woman's a star. Yeah.
Here's an ace that she dealt. She had a shout-out to the special needs folks. Turns out that in Alaska, Sarah Palin, CBS is reporting, slashed the budget for special needs kids by 62%. So, in other words, she was lying.
Right.
So is that an ace or is that a joker?
Yeah. Ken, thanks a lot for the call. But, Ken, actually, I agree with Ken's point. We do need to be pushing back, and they need to be pushing back hard right now, real fast. You know, for example, there were all those touching shots of her Down syndrome child.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Being passed around like a bong at Burning Man.
Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. There's that and also her pregnant daughter. And this is the woman who line item vetoed in the last Alaska budget money for an 18-month residential program for unwed, homeless teenage mothers.
Mm-hmm. Well, her teenage mother isn't homeless, though. So
right, right.
Yeah,
and neither
that's
was
all, that's the difference.
Neither was she when she was an unwed teenage mother.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's quite a wild thing. Dennis in El Segundo, California. Hey, Dennis.
Yeah, Tom.
Yeah. Hey, thanks
Can
for listening to K-Talk, Dennis. What's on your mind? I hear you just fine.
What's bothering me is this 80% approval rating that the governor of Alaska enjoys. And,
well, that's a number that is subject to some considerable dispute.
I've heard 65%. She's fairly new. You remember what Bush's ratings were when he first took office, or at least, you know,
yeah,
shortly thereafter.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is that any governor in any state under any political flag could earn a high approval rating when they pass out checks.
Right. Yeah. And you're right. And she's passing out what is it, $1,200 to everybody?
Right.
$1,200 extra.
Number,
I thought. Yeah.
That's the number I heard. Now she framed it the other night in her speech that she was returning the money to her constituents. And actually, this money comes from a tax on the oil companies
right.
that will add that tax to the cost of the oil and then they pump it down to us.
Yeah, so it's, yeah, that would be a way to frame it. Thanks a lot, Dennis. Yeah. Well said. Go ahead, Ron.
Oh, yeah, they pump the oil down to us, but also it goes into the international oil market, which is important to note. It's not like if we drill in Alaska, for instance, we get to keep all the oil. All the oil goes into the international oil market.
Right.
The Chinese,
Russia, China,
will be enjoying
Japan.
Our oil.
There you go. Yeah. We have a minute left. Keith in Seattle on Talk 1090. Your hometown here, Ron. Mm. Keith, you're on the air.
Thank you. Good morning, guys. I would urge you to reference or Google, I guess, Ann Kilkenny is the woman's name. K-I-L-K-E-N-N-Y.
Is this the librarian that Sarah Palin tried to ban the book set, the library of?
But not just that. She goes into detail about the woman when they had a surplus. She borrowed money to build roads and buy bonds. She ended up with a $38 million deficit.
Oh, she left her town tens of millions of dollars in debt.
Mm-hmm. It's just quite amazing that not so much the detail, but the ruthlessness with which this woman has ostracized anyone who ever attempted to have an idea separate from her or,
including her brother-in-law.
Yes.
And I think the bottom line really comes down to party affiliation.
She's party first, not country first. I mean, that's the bottom line. John, thanks a lot for the call.
And
Ron,
maybe,
final
and
thoughts?
Palin first. Well, I thought the most telling moment in the whole thing was when everybody started chanting, "Drill, baby, drill." Our friend David Bender dubbed it the triumph of the drill.
There
moment.
You go. Ron Reagan with us on Air America Radio, 27 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Stick around. Theocracy Watch up next.
This is Tom Hartman. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Slightly unbalanced. Fred Clarkson is with us. He is an independent journalist, author, and lecturer. His most recent book, Dispatches from the Religious Left, The Future of Faith and Politics in America, from IG Publishing. Co-founder of Talk to Action, a group blog dedicated to reporting on and analysis of the religious right, and is a member of the editorial board of the Public Eye magazine. Websites talkdigit2action.org and fredclarkson.com. Fred, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Fred, you have you were referred to us by the good folks at TheocracyWatch.org, and I believe you have an association with them.
Yes.
And you have been doing some considerable research on Sarah Palin and the Christian Dominionist theocrats and her association therewith. This goes beyond just 2 weeks ago in her church, the fellow from Jews for Jesus getting up and saying, and let me see here, I've got the actual quote. It was pretty startling. Mr. Brickner, he described the terrorist attacks on Israelis as, quote, God's judgment of unbelief of Jews who haven't embraced Christianity. She sat in the pew for that. But this really goes way beyond that.
It does indeed. There's stuff running on the Associated Press wire today, and as well as in the Wall Street Journal, with direct quotes from her, not just somebody who spoke at a church where she happened to be sitting, but her own beliefs that we're living in the end time, biblically prophesied end times. That's the church that she's was brought up in, and that
this is the Assemblies of God Church.
An Assemblies of God.
I'll tell you, I attended an Assemblies of God Church for about 6 months, maybe 25 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and there's a lot of passion in those churches. There's, in fact, I actually wrote about it in a book of mine called The Prophet's Way about my experience there.
Mm-hmm.
There's an enormous passion. I mean, people are just really, really swept up in this, and it's not it's not to be taken lightly. I mean, these folks are really serious about what they believe.
Well, they are indeed, and not just intellectually serious, but as you say, very passionate, and that it informs what they call a worldview. And that is the idea that God's plan, not just for your life, but for the world, is being revealed as we speak, and that we're living in end times that could end in a nuclear conflagration, other kinds of wars.
That should actually end in that. That, you know, that being the biblical prophecy that the skin would melt from their flesh, you know, the great fire from the sky, all these things that you find in Revelations.
Well, that's exactly right. And these folks are living the dream, as it were.
And that only 144,000 people will survive.
Right. And I can tell you their
theology.
but the idea that Sarah Palin has said, there's actually videotape that the AP has saying that the Iraq war is part of God's plan, and that pipeline that she discussed in her talk last night is God's will. So it's the idea not just that you hold to ideas that maybe you're living in the end times, but the idea that as a politician, as a public policy figure, that the Book of Revelation informs the direction of your foreign policy is a very serious kind of question.
What sorts of, you know, Ronald Reagan famously said to, I believe it was the Prime Minister of Israel over a luncheon, that he believed that we were living in the end times, gave some examples. I actually have those quotes in a book I wrote called Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. You know, James Watt, of course, had talked about why he was selling off public lands out west. He said, soon Jesus is going to come and make all things new, so it doesn't matter if we despoil the environment. George W. Bush, arguably, is of similar mind, or although he hasn't been quite as explicit, many of the folks he hangs out with have been. For somebody who is relatively naive about the subtleties and complexities of politics in the Middle East, or international politics, period, but particularly in the Middle East, because these folks want a war in the plain of Armageddon about 80, 90 miles northwest of Jerusalem, what might this mean if John McCain, God forbid's heart were to give out, or he was to have his fifth bout with melanoma, and Sarah Palin became the president of the United States?
It would mean that somebody who gets most of her information from a lifetime of teaching in the Assemblies of God is the president, and her worldview is informed by an apocalyptic sensibility, energized by the idea that we're living in the end times and may see the second coming of Jesus sometime after in the middle of a global war. If she holds to that belief, and there is some considerable evidence that she does, that means that foreign policy is no longer made on the basis of pragmatic considerations. You know, whether they're peace oriented or war oriented, they're based on a highly selective interpretation of biblical prophecy, and that's a wild card.
The Constitution Party, which is associated with the Alaska Independence Party, has in their platform a sentence that says, if you are unclear what this means, the biblical law as interpreted means the death penalty for homosexuals, adulterers, and recalcitrant children. And of course, those things are actually all arguably in Leviticus. Is this, I mean, are we looking at a woman who would be potentially a theocrat, a mullah, or are we looking at a woman who has simply been sucking up to the religious right in order to gain political power in Alaska? I mean, how real and substantial is this, or to what extent is this posturing?
I think in the case of George Bush, it was posturing. I think he knew how to say the right things at the right time to the right people.
Well, his father had given him the job of...
In the case of Sarah Palin, the religious right itself wanted her. The Council for National Policy made it very clear. There was no
wanted
way...
Wanted her as vice president. Wanted her as vice president.
Wanted her as vice president. Mitt Romney and Pawlenty and and Lieberman were unacceptable. They made it clear they wanted somebody who was really one of them. That was going to be their price for their support. And they got it in Sarah Palin. This is the thing. I mean, she has lived her life, 20 years in this church, and that she's publicly expressed views that are consistent with an end times viewpoint. Some of her public policy activities, such as the promotion of creationism, the rolling back of gay and lesbian civil rights, her particular view on abortion, it's not just being pro-life, but no rape or incest exceptions. It's what's called a 100% pro-life view. That's, I might add, consistent with that of the Constitution Party, but not the Republican Party. She has the world view of a religious rights theocrat more than any figure ever to reach a position on a national ticket.
Wow. I mean, you know, Ben Franklin left Massachusetts in the late 1600s, early 1700s. It must have been the early 1700s. I think he was born in like 1708. But because they were still prosecuting women for witchcraft. I mean, he was so horrified by the theocrats in Massachusetts. Massachusetts almost split apart from the Union. I mean, it was a big problem because they wanted theocracy there.
Yeah.
Is there a serious possibility that this could be the first time that theocracy, I mean, a literal theocracy, is rearing its ugly head in the United States?
Certainly the first time since the 17th, 18th century. I mean, you're right. The theocratic elements were exactly what the framers of the Constitution were trying to eliminate, and it took a long time to disestablish the state churches that were running the show for 150 years and more. Now, if Sarah Palin happened to assume the presidency, it doesn't mean that America becomes automatically a theocracy. However, theocratic policies are already being promoted by people, by Sarah Palin and people like her, throughout the United States. Theocratic ideas are present in our politics every single day, and we're talking about them all the time. It's just that we don't use that terminology and that framework to look at them.
We're talking with Fred Clarkson, author, lecturer. His most recent book, Dispatches from the Religious Left, The Future of Faith in Politics in America, co-founder of Talk to Action, talk2action.org, and fredclarkson.com, of course. Fred, we just have a minute left.
Mm-hmm.
What should we do in the media, in the press? What should Democrats do to highlight this? I mean, this is a touchy topic. Somebody's religion. How do we talk about this in a way that doesn't ridicule, that is respectful of it, and yet at the same time sounds the alarm bell?
Well, that's exactly the right question. And one is we have to respect people's right to their own beliefs. But the other thing is we also have to hold them accountable. And that is, so if Sarah Palin, if her politics are informed by her faith, and clearly they are, it is reasonable to ask the question, okay, you've said that we think we're in biblically prophesied end times, you see that Iraq is a part of God's plan, how do you see biblical prophecies related to American foreign policy? In all of its details.
These would be excellent questions for journalists to ask her. I'll bet you nobody does.
But we'll give it our best shot.
You're absolutely right. Fred Clarkson, keep up the good work. Keep on the research. Appreciate
your
being with us. FredClarkson.com, talk2action.org. 45 minutes past the hour.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman Program at hartmanradio.com.
For the hour, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Margaret in Arizona, you're on the air. Margaret, welcome to the show.
Hello. I wanted to express the fact that she was able to veto a special needs bill, and she and McCain. The reason is because I'm a newly retired high school mathematics teacher of 35 years in the state of Arizona, and what people want is they don't want special needs classrooms. They want the regular ed teacher to be the teacher of their children, and they don't wish to have their the term special needs placed on their child. So she's definitely wrong, but I've come across thousands of women just like her.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, there's and actually the debate about mainstreaming is one that goes back a long way in public education. But the bottom line is, you know, her vetoing things like educational funds for special needs kids, you know, not just Title I, but regardless of whether, you know, regardless of how they're labeled. I mean, it's
exactly. And just
funds.
Like your last guest, so much of that belief system comes from the attachment to certain religious groups.
Yeah, yeah, well said. Margaret, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. John in Fresno, California. Hey, John.
Good morning. Thanks for a great show.
Thank you.
Just a little thought experiment here. Let's say it was a couple weeks ago and Apple computer solemnly announced that Steve Jobs' health had taken a turn for the worse and they had to pick a new CEO and they were naming Sarah Palin. What do you think would have happened to the price of Apple stock?
I think it would fall through the floor.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this is just, other people have said it, this is just so cynical. You know, country first is laughable. But the thing about this that's so sad is that the Democratic primary process, I mean, Barack Obama is a terrific guy. He's bright, he's articulate, very capable, he'd make a great president. But the fact is, Democrats nominated the one person who is potentially beatable after 8 years of Bush. It's unbelievable.
We'll see, John. I think we underestimate Sarah Palin at considerable risk. I'm telling you, she's got a very strong base. She's an eloquent speaker. She's spent a lot of time in front of a television camera, and that in and of itself. I mean, you know, she started out as a newscaster. She's comfortable in front of a TV camera, and she demonstrated that last night.
Well, that's
she
all
understands.
True, but the point is there have to be hundreds, if not thousands, of other conservatives and probably dozens of other conservative women who are far more experienced. The only thing she brings to the ticket is what George W. Bush brought in 2000. She can help energize the base, and she's electable. And it doesn't matter that she's a zero in terms of proven capability.
And to the Republicans, it doesn't matter. And that's why the government is so badly broken and has been. John, thanks. Well said. I mean, let's just look at the real stuff. Mike Allen sent us this email, and it's really great. As the mayor of Wasilla, which, by the way, may well be the name of the pagan god of Osetia, the country, or what used to be the country, the region south of Georgia. Isn't that interesting? How's that for coincidence? This is according to Wikipedia, so who knows. But in any case, as the mayor of Wasilla, Palin hired a lobbyist, traveled to Washington annually to support earmarks for her town totaling $27 million. In her 2 years as governor, she's requested nearly $750 million in special federal funding, by far the largest per capita request in the nation. While Palin notes she rejected plans to build a $398 million bridge from Ketchikan to an island with 50 residents and an airport, that opposition, the Bridge to Nowhere, that opposition came only after the plan was ridiculed nationally as the Bridge to Nowhere. Compared to McCain and his two decades in the Senate, Obama does have a more meager record, but he has worked with Republicans to pass legislation that expanded efforts to intercept illegal shipments of weapons of mass destruction and to help destroy conventional weapons stockpiles. That legislation became law last year. The efforts of Barack Obama to demean that accomplishment would also mean to demean the work of Senator Richard Lugar of Indiana, the Republican, a respected foreign policy voice in the Senate. In Illinois, Barack Obama was the leader on two major contentious issues in Illinois, studying racial profiling by police and requiring recordings of interrogations and potential death penalty cases. He also successfully co-authored major ethics reform legislation in Illinois. This guy has a solid legislative background. The Tax Policy Center, a think tank run by the jointly by the Brookings Institution and the Urban Institute, concluded that Obama's tax plan would increase after-tax income for middle-income taxpayers by about 5% by 2012, or $2,200 annually. McCain's plan, which cuts tax across all levels, would raise taxes for after-tax income for middle-income taxpayers by 3%. So the center concluded. So Obama's going to provide $80 billion in tax breaks, mainly for poor workers and the elderly, including tripling the earned income tax credit for minimum wage workers and higher credits for larger families. He would also raise income tax on people over income over $250,000. So on and on it goes. So anyhow, we've got about a minute left here. Let's go to Kathy in Edmond, Washington. Hey, Kathy, your thoughts?
Oh, hello. This is my first time calling in.
Thank you.
And the reason for my call is I'm a mother of an adult special needs daughter that I raised initially by myself. My husband died several years ago. And I'm her care provider. And my comment was about Sarah Palin last night stating that we have a friend in the White House that her and McCain get gifts in.
Mm-hmm.
What is she going to do as a friend of the White House?
Yeah. Well, if she
If
she continues behaving the way she did as governor of Alaska, she will be vetoing funds for people like you who are parents of special needs kids. Kathy, we're out of time, but thank you. Excellent point and very well made. Appreciate the call. It is 57 minutes past the hour. Stick around. We'll be back right after the news.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the third hour of our coverage from the Republican National Convention. Tonight, John McCain speaking. Last night, Sarah Palin. A lot going on, a lot in the news. We've been talking about it. We'll be picking up your calls here in a few minutes, continuing with this. Although it's possible Ralph Reed is scheduled to drop by at the bottom of the hour, and Christy Harvey may be dropping by as well. But right now, Dr. Deal Hudson is with us. He's the publisher of Inside Catholic, the author of Onward Christian Soldiers. He ran Catholic Outreach, a Catholic outreach program, for both the Bush-Cheney campaigns and is currently an advisor to John McCain's campaign. The website InsideCatholic.com, if you want to check that out and learn more about what Dr. Deal Hudson is doing. Dr. Hudson, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom. It's great to be with you.
Thank you. Thank you very much for joining us, sir. I'm curious.
By the way, Tom, I happen to be with Ralph Reed, who is looking forward to calling in later on in your show.
Oh, okay. Great. Great. Give me my best regards. I look forward to that conversation. I'm curious how Catholics are responding to the hard Protestant fundamentalist rhetoric of the church that Sarah Palin is a member of. I mean, this goes beyond 2 weeks ago, her sitting in the pews as a fellow from Jews for Jesus said that the suicide attacks and the bombings in Israel were the result of God's will because the Jews had not converted to Christianity. But the embrace of a fundamentalism that, you know, a last days fundamentalism, that Pope John Paul II, in any case, as I recall, put some distance between himself. You know, across the Christian community, everybody is figuring someday this is probably going to happen. But this is really a Protestant phenomenon, is it not?
Well, but you know, Tom, Catholics aren't even aware of this in terms of her religious background. This is not something that's even close to being on their radar screen. And I think you can take it from me that I know, you know, where they are in their thinking. I mean, they're looking at a woman who is pro-life, who is pro-marriage, and who has lived it, who, you know, has walked the walk. And that's what they care about. I mean, I was with, you know, 50 Catholics in the skybox last night at the convention, and they were absolutely going crazy with excitement. And, you know, if the issue of whatever fundamentalist rhetoric or fundamentalist positions come out of her church in the course of the campaign, you know, they'll digest that and they'll look at it. But, you know, what they'll see is basically a person who, on the other side of it, is the kind of person they want to be in the next administration.
So you figure it's going to be sort of a the enemy of my enemy is my friend perspective, that you know, as long as she is opposed to abortion rights what else? I mean, you know, she's not opposed to the death penalty, which I know the Catholic Church is officially opposed to. She's not opposed to the war in Iraq, and Pope John Paul II spoke out loudly and strongly in opposition to the war in Iraq. These are life issues, are they not?
Honestly, I mean, that's the argument that the Catholic left and the Democratic, you know, the Democrats who are trying to get the Catholic vote, that's the argument they will use. They'll say that she is, you know, wrong on the death penalty. They'll say she wasn't opposed to the war in Iraq and so forth. But this is not going to the least that weaken her appeal to Catholic voters, because, first of all, the death penalty is not absolutely black and white in Catholic teaching. The death penalty is still allowed in some circumstances. That's often not understood. In terms of the war in Iraq, we know that there was Vatican criticism of this, but still, there's no official position in the Catholic Church on the war in Iraq, but there is an official position on life and marriage, and she perfectly represents those official positions. This is not to say she's a perfect Catholic candidate. I'm not stating that. But I'm saying the big picture is she's very, very attractive to Catholic voters.
Yeah, the Assemblies of God, as an extreme fundamentalist Protestant church, and I speak as somebody who once, for a little less than a year, attended an Assemblies of God church, would tell you to your face that as a Catholic you're not a Christian. Is that not going to be a problem?
Well, I used to be a Southern Baptist, as you probably know. And one reason I got out of the kind of community that I was in was because of those kind of attitudes.
Right, but this is Sarah Palin's perspective.
I don't know. I don't think Sarah Palin would look at me and say I'm not a Christian.
Well, for 20 years she's been sitting in that church hearing that kind of rhetoric.
You know,
she heard about Jews two weeks ago.
You're generalizing from what you know about Assembly of God. I don't know what her minister has been saying to her over the last 20 years. I do know that in the course of the campaign, whatever it is she's been hearing from her particular minister will come out. I mean, we both know that.
Sure.
But until that those specific issues come out, I don't think we should presume that what has been being said in her church.
Right. So, bottom line here, you figure that her both supporting the pro-life position and living it, you know, carrying to term a Down syndrome child, for example, supporting her child in carrying forward a pregnancy out of wedlock, that these things are going to win her the embrace of the Catholic faith. And I get that. I suspect you're probably right to a large extent.
And the contrast with Joe Biden is just really very stark.
Who is a Catholic?
He's a Catholic, and he is, you know, very pro-abortion, as you know. And
well, he's not pro-abortion at all. I don't know anybody who's pro-abortion.
Let's call it pro-choice. Okay, that's fine.
Thank you.
But he is someone whose own bishop in Delaware has said he will not be allowed to speak in Catholic schools, even if he's elected vice president, because of his position on those issues. There is quite a contrast there. And, of course, we don't even need to talk about Obama, who is very extreme on those issues.
And who is also not Catholic, but he's also a Protestant.
That's right, and we have to throw that in. That's important. He's not. Right. He doesn't have to be held to that standard.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating. Thank you for sharing your insight with us. I didn't want to debate you. I just wanted to get your take on it, and I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Dr. Deal Hudson.
Thank you, Tom, and thanks for bringing those things to my attention about her denomination, because I really wasn't very aware of it.
I think you'll find it interesting if you dig into the Assemblies of God.
Well, I'm sure we'll be digging into it.
Okay, InsideCatholic.com, Deal Hudson's website. Thank you, sir, for being with us. It is 13 minutes past the hour. Telephone number 866-303-2270. Bob in Melbourne, Florida. Hey, Bob, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. I was just wondering, how long do you think it's going to be before Sarah gives her official endorsement to Mark Baggage for senator from Alaska?
Senator Ted Stevens. The guy that she was the head of the 527 raising money for just 2 years ago?
Right.
Yeah.
But since she's calling herself the anti-corruption candidate,
right,
and
she,
that she opposed
Maverick,
the bridge to nowhere, et cetera, et cetera.
That was after she supported it, yeah.
Right. You know, I just wonder how long it's going to be before she...
I think she is already condemning him implicitly, Bob. I doubt that she will explicitly condemn him. She won't have to. That's very much kind of inside Alaska politics. I doubt most Americans are even familiar with the details of Ted Stevens' corruption indictment. But I think that she has already done so implicitly, and she's putting some distance between herself and him. And frankly, I don't think that that's going to play out as a big issue. I think that this is going to be an election, as we have seen ever since the first Nixon election, ever since Lee Atwater got involved in politics. It's going to be an election about gut, not about issues. And therein lies a great opportunity. Barack Obama is a brilliant guy, and he inspires people at the gut level, and also great danger. Carl in Chicago. Carl, a little less than a minute. What's up?
Real quick then, Tom. Thanks for taking the call. Calling regarding your talking about the community organizer slur earlier.
Yes.
You know, we recall, Palin even brought it up last night in her speech, and I think Giuliani did as well. Obama was widely attacked by the media for the bitter comments, for supposedly looking down on a set of citizens, right?
Right.
Then why are we not hearing similar media outrage over the Republican derision of those community organizers, people who have dedicated themselves to living the democratic principles, sacrificing their time in the trenches of democracy, right? So where is the media?
Because they are aggressively, well, first of all, the media doesn't do anything. I mean, they basically roll over, and whoever pushes the talking points the hardest. But secondly, as I said, they are in the process. The Republican spin machine in the background, and Carl, thanks for raising that, is in the process of converting the word community organizer into some variation on getting all, and in fact, they're going to start inserting adjectives. It's going to be like getting all the scary black folks together, getting all the angry African Americans together. This, mark my words.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This convention has been transformed. The first 2 days, it was a funeral. I'm telling you, it was a funeral. And today, there's a bounce in people's gait, as it were. They have their rock star. They have their person who can fill a stadium with 20,000 people. I believe. I believe that that's the case. And Sarah Palin is going to add a formidable voice to this ticket. Meanwhile, Dick Cheney is over in Georgia right now with Mr. Saakashvili. Pounding his chest and talking about how we're going to stop the Russians and we're going to help. This, the October surprise that happened in August, in my humble opinion. And the National Enquirer reports, And the National Enquirer, you say, well, it's basically the only newspaper left in America that actually does investigative reporting. They're doing investigative reporting into celebrities, but they do investigative reporting, and they actually do vet their stories. They've only once been successfully sued for improperly for reporting a false story. That was by Carol Burnett many, many years ago. The National Enquirer is reporting that Sarah Palin was getting it on, had an affair with her husband's business partner. More forthcoming, but the McCain camp is threatening to sue, which is not a good thing to threaten the National Enquirer with. They're like, oh, good, yeah, bring it on, bring it on. Carol in San Diego. Hey, Carol, welcome to the show.
Hey, Tom, thank you for taking my call. And also, I want to say that you guys have been talking about Catholics. I'm in the age group which everyone's looking for the vote. I'm going with Obama and Senator Biden, and I'll tell you why. I am tired of Republican women being such hypocrites. They talk about family values. They talk about how a woman can do it all. I have a healthcare background. I've been in it for 30 years. I also have been in the school districts taking care of special education children. I'm very aware of the health needs and the education needs of these children. And I really resent, I was watching last night, I really resent how that child was passed around. You know, it's being used to lure people in.
Carol, I have to say, I think that's a bit of a cheap shot. I mean, the child is a baby. It's heavy. It's everybody's standing there. It's a long speech. They're passing it from person to person. It seemed to me like, you know, everybody was caring for it.
Well, did you see how much focus was on every one of them? Every time, you know, they criticized when the Democrats were, the cameras were on the Democrats' families. Mm-hmm. All they focused on last night, starting with Cindy holding the baby, and you know the father had it for a few minutes, and the little girl. It, you know what? That child has special needs. I don't think that family has a clue. Mm-hmm. And I resent the brainwashing that I hear in the evangelicals who say. I've heard women come out and talk exactly with what Sarah Palin has said about this war is, you know, God-driven and God-approved, big stamp of approval. No, that's not how we feel. Yeah. Not at all.
So as a Catholic woman, you're not enthusiastic about Sarah Palin?
Absolutely not. She's a scary thing.
Yeah.
Okay, she's Carol. Definitely. I'm also pro animal care, therapy dogs, therapy animals, and you know her tote the gun
air. Yeah, she's paying $150 bounty for the front left leg of a wolf.
That absolutely. To watch her last night, I had to do the nausea and vomiting. Medication, because she's so fake.
Okay.
Absolutely
Carol.
Fake.
Carol, thank you very much for sharing that with us. I appreciate your calling in. Matt in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hey, Matt, a little less than a minute here before the break at the bottom of the hour.
Hey, Tom, I'll make it quick. I'll make it very quick. I'm a Catholic. I was Assembly of God member for over 20 years. I was raised in the church, and then, obviously, I converted to Catholicism. Some of the platform in the AOG church is extremely scary, especially as a Catholic. We were taught that Catholics were not Christian and would go to hell.
Yeah.
Just to give you that background. But
I know, I've been there, I've heard it.
the scary part about her is the end times aspect. I mean, if you want to play Risk, the game, you know, the board game, and God's driving that, that's fine. But when you're talking international politics and things that can really affect this country and the world at large, it's scary with someone with that ideology coming to the table.
Yeah, I am very concerned about it, and that's why I thank the good people over at Theocracy Watch. Matt, thanks for the call. TheocracyWatch.org for staying on this. And I suspect more of this will come out as time goes on. It's 27 minutes past the hour. I believe Ralph Reed will be with us after the break. Stick around. We'll be right back. Tom Hartman here, 866-303-2270, tomhartman.com, airamerica.com.
This is Tom Hartman. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Monitoring capabilities, and they're not happy about it, sir.
Well, it's too late for them to do anything about it. Take them a message, would you?
Yes, sir. What is it?
Every step you take, every rule you break, every job you take, and every dime you make, we'll be watching you. If you go astray, if you run away, we'll know right away, because we're watching you.
Very good, sir.
Most of you don't see. You belong to me. Your biochip gives us ownership. You don't have a say.
Minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I don't know. Maybe Ralph Reed got a call from Rick Santorum. We're not being able to get a hold of him. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And let's see here. Dan in Culver City, California. Hey, Dan, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I love your show. And I just wanted to bring up a point that I was raised in the Pentecostal church and the Assembly of God Church here in Los Angeles, and I rejected it when I got a little bit older. And I just wanted to put the question out that I think mainstream America might need to consider. Is she a holy roller, and does she talk in tongues? I think it speaks to her.
Yeah, which is what is normally done every single Sunday in the Assemblies of God Church.
Yeah, I mean, these people...
And slain in the Spirit. Yeah.
I grew up with people like falling on the floor, and you know, the women would fall on the floor and the men would stand over with blankets so that they wouldn't spread their legs, you know, and the money would fall out of their pockets and the people get red in the face and screaming and stuff. And I mean, I really think that if you put this question to her, she would religiously have to answer it truthfully. And I think the people of America would not be so comfortable with having a person like this with her finger on the button. Who like lose themselves in the Holy Spirit, you know, and let them take over their
It's going to be very interesting to watch. You know, John McCain recently changed his religion from Episcopalian, as I recall, to Southern Baptist, clearly a calculated move. And maybe she will suddenly become a Southern Baptist, too. Who knows? Or maybe she'll even become an Episcopalian, get on the other side of the other side of Protestantism, all, you know, to where it's more pomp and ceremony and there's and not even a suggestion that anybody should talk in tongues. Dan, great point. Thanks for bringing it up. Miriam in Santa Fe, New Mexico, listening on KTRC. Hey, Miriam.
Hey, Tom. The first thing that I thought of when McCain chose Sarah Palin to run with him was, especially after she said herself that someone would have to tell her what the actual job of being vice president was, the enormous ego and the enormous ambition that this woman has, especially after one of your callers just said that the Alaska legislature only meets 60 days a year.
Right.
I mean, the enormity of her ego is mind-boggling. The other thing I want to say is anybody who's ever seen Joe Biden conduct an investigation on C-SPAN in front of, you know, if, as the head of his committee, knows that this guy takes his job very seriously, and he doesn't let anybody off the hook.
Yep. Yep, and he has executive experience running committees, running his own staff, running elections. This whole executive experience thing is a canard. It's a smokescreen. Miriam, very well said. Thank you very much. I appreciate the call. Joan in Riverside, California. Hey, Joan.
Hi, Tom. I'm a 75-year-old progressive Democrat, and I am among those people that need to have you on the line. I suggest that everybody do what I do. Go into every store, every place that you can that advertises here. Get yourself so that when I go in there, a lot of people go by me, they're managers, and they say, thank you, you're welcome. Mm-hmm.
And you thank them for advertising on K-Talk.
You bet. And 11:50 a.m. radio here.
Yep. That's wonderful, Joan. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so kind of you. And it's an important message. This is listener-supported talk radio. It's supported by folks like you, Joan, supporting our advertisers, letting them know that you're listening, and letting our radio stations know that you're listening as well.
I help Bill Hedrick get elected.
Yeah. Good.
Okay.
Good. Well, that's great work. Joan, thank you very much for the call.
Sure.
Great to hear from you today, and I do appreciate it. Patricia in San Dimas, California. Hey, Patricia. Patricia?
Yes.
Hey, you're on the air.
Thank you so very much. Please forgive me. I'm a little nervous, first-time caller. I have been a Republican ever since I became an American citizen. And I just wanted to say that Sarah Palin does not represent most of the women that I believe that are smart, I guess. I'm mother to pro-life, and I'm ashamed of McCain getting her on the ticket.
Why?
Well, a couple things. Like I said, I'm a mother to, and that alone takes so much work as a mother. I'm a stay-at-home mom, and it's so much work, and to neglect a little baby or to say it's okay to have a child, having another child, and still go to work, to me that is shameful. You, as a mother, they need you. As a father, they need you. They need you to be there, not to mention 24 hours as a mother, but they need you psychologically, physically, you know, it would be, to me, it's a shame that most Republicans are really backing this up. I hope I am going to be one of the rebels in the Republican Party. I am not going to vote for McCain. And
you are not going to vote for McCain.
That is correct. I encourage most mothers, most wives, either pro-life, pro-choice. I am a pro-life, like I said, but I do not demand it for everybody because it's not on my business, but I demand it for myself.
Yeah.
And I believe that's what pro-choice, I guess, is. You got to choose with your life, I guess, be responsible.
Well, I think most of the folks who describe themselves as pro-life, I mean, I consider myself pro-life. I'm opposed to the death penalty. I'm opposed to war. And frankly, I can't imagine. Hey, Amy, I can't imagine getting an abortion and just the difficulty, just the awful agony around that. Can you see if Amy's got a minute, if she can come by and just update us? Amy Gooden just walked by here.
Try
and get her on. Patricia, thank you so much for the
call. Yeah, please, I encourage the people and the women, start talking to the church. I go to church the same way.
Just
please encourage all women to be a rebel. And
there you go.
Thank you so much, Patricia.
You're welcome. Amy Goodman is with us, just walking by. In fact, Katie Couric is sitting just 10 feet behind you. It's not to be confused. It's a wild day. Yeah. Actually, you're kind of the polar extremes of from the corporate media to the real media. And again, always an honor to sit and talk with you, Amy. We had a long conversation on Monday. We got a lot of feedback. What's the update? What's going on out there?
Well, nothing has really changed.
as listeners who weren't here the other day, on Monday, Labor Day, around 4 o'clock, I got this call on the floor of the convention center when I was interviewing delegates that our two producers, Nicole Salazar and Sharif Odokadous, were being arrested, bloody arrested. That's how I put it in the column this week, quite literally, covering a protest. And I raced over with my camera person, and there was a long riot police line. All the arrested people were inside, and I said I asked to speak to the commanding officer that our two producers fully accredited, and we have all our credentials hanging around our neck. And they saw mine. I'd just come from the convention floor. We're inside, and I needed to get them released. And so they just pulled me right through that police line and said, you're arrested.
Right.
And so now I've been charged with a misdemeanor. They face felony riot charges. We were all brought to jail that night, though we were released, and nothing has changed.
What can my listeners do? We're talking with Amy Goodman, democracynow.org, of course, the website, Democracy Now. What can my listeners do to support you in not just in pushing back you and Sharif Abdelkadous and Nicole Salazar, not just in pushing back and defending yourselves, but also in exposing this god-awful story that none of the corporate media will talk about?
I mean, it is ridiculous, because when you shut down reporters, you're closing the eyes and ears of a democratic society. The press is essential to the functioning of democracy, and this is supposed to be a celebration of the democratic process here, you know, in Denver, here, how it all operates, and we're seeing it very clearly. Well, people certainly could call the county district attorney's office, could call the city attorney and find out. You know, by the way, it wasn't only us. A number of reporters were picked up,
right.
An AP photographer, two videographers from Pepper Spray Productions. They were just recently released. Another AP videographer had his camera broken. The charges should be dropped. People can go to our website at democracynow.org, and we've got the email addresses and the phone numbers of people that can be called. I mean,
great.
It's fighting for a free press, and that is absolutely essential, especially on this day as we move into the McCain speech tonight. We should be able to cover not only what's inside the convention and not only in the corporate suites, which we should be in every one of them, because that's where the delegates go and they're hobnobbing with the lobbyists, but out on the streets, which represents civil society. It's
that's right.
Protest movement.
It's we the rabble.
Protesting because they've been kept out, yeah?
Yeah, as John Adams called us, you know, derisively, but hey, it's we the rabble. That's America. We are America. And just, you know, the whole idea of these guys.
The YouTube video, Tom, of the arrest, because, I mean, this is the problem that the police have right now, is that Nicole filmed her own violent arrest because they were coming at her, and she was a videographer there.
Right.
And you hear them saying, face on the ground, and you hear her saying, press, press, showing her press pass, and then you hear her screams.
Yeah.
And then my video, I mean, the video of my arrest, it's been hit over 600,000 times now on YouTube.
So let me encourage all of our listeners to go to democracynow.org. And act. Make those phone calls to the local officials here in support of Amy Goodman, Sharif Abdelkadous, Nicole Salazar, and all the other journalists who are under assault. This is, broadcasting live from the police state of St. Paul. Tom Hartman with you.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman program at hartmanradio.com.
One minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio, AirAmerica.com for our live web stream. Hi there, TomHartman.com. If you want to drop into our live chat room, 866-303-2270. And we just had a web stream crash here, so I do not have access to my call screener software. So I'm going to ask Chris, and you can even pop open a mic if you want to do it, Chris, in New York. Or Lauren, whichever one is appropriate, to just, shout out the name and city of the person you're putting on the air and put them on the air, and let's have a conversation. That's right. We have Christy Harvey. Thank you very much for the reminder. It's so perfect that it just croaked. Christy Harvey, director of strategic communications for the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C., AmericanProgress.org, the website, and also MikeCheckRadio.org. Hey, Christy.
I was just waiting for Chris to say, and our first caller is Christy Harvey.
That would have been funny.
Shout out for Harvey. How
are
you?
That would have been funny. I'm fine, and I am so sorry.
Hanging in there.
Well, it's 2 weeks straight, back to back.
My goodness.
Get down here early in the morning, and the stuff goes to late at night, and I'm, as you can tell, you know, just dropping that cue, I am fried.
I am sure you must be. Well, you need a vacation of sorts after this, I'm sure.
I am so looking forward to getting home tonight at midnight.
Oh, man. How's the convention itself been? Are people nice to you? Are you in enemy territory? Or?
No. It's Republicans, are, if nothing else, are well-behaved. They're polite.
Well, good.
They know how to be polite. So what's on your radar screen here, Christy? This is our below-the-radar segment, the things that, you know, the news that isn't on the front of the news. What's up?
I had a couple quick ones that are just, they're not really news itself, but they were sort of amusing. Have you seen that Vanity Fair post that's going around about Cindy McCain's outfit on Tuesday night?
No, I have not.
Fascinating stuff, especially, usually I would just ignore this kind of thing, but the fact that the GOP has made such a big deal about how they're the party of the people, while Barack Obama is an elitist aristocrat, when everyone knows that if you're going to run for president, you probably have a little bit of money. So Vanity Fair, you know, decided to take this head on, and they priced out Cindy McCain's outfit Tuesday night at the convention. And if you take her Oscar de la Renta dress and her 3-carat diamond earrings and her designer shoes and you add it all up, her outfit cost anywhere between $299,000 and $313,000.
You're kidding.
Her outfit cost more than probably your house.
it did cost more than my house.
Yeah, so I thought that was sort of an interesting rejoinder to the who's an elitist and what does that mean attack there. $300,000 on an outfit.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm wearing a $14 dress from Ann Taylor today.
That's it.
Isn't that wild?
How do you spend $300,000 on a dress? I didn't even know there was such a thing.
Well, it's also the 3-carat diamond earrings were especially pricey there, as were the 4-strand pearl necklace. That right there was practically the money. The dress itself, just the yellow dress that she wore when she was on stage with Laura Bush, was $3,000.
I'm curious, Christy, your thoughts on this belittling Barack Obama as being a community organizer. I am predicting, and I have been on this show all day, that within a few days, a week, maybe a month, we'll see how long it takes, but that the phrase community organizer is going to be this election cycle's Willie Horton. That they are going to turn that phrase in the minds of white middle-class voters into the guy who rallies the angry black folks.
Well, it was just such a strange attack, too, because, you know, the community organizer is the guy who's out in the community doing, you know, the grassroots helping.
Americans know that.
Well, exactly. To turn that into, to say he's a community organizer and an elitist, which right. sort of, they those two terms fight against
Democrats,
each other.
You know what the Democrats need to be doing right now is they need to be putting together 60-second spots. I mean, they should be doing this today, now, as we are talking, 60-second spots where they're going into the heartland and they're getting the farmers who are community organizers, the white farmers who are community organizers. They're getting the Hispanic community organizers in Southern California who, you know, the heirs of Cesar Chavez, the white community organizers. Set aside the African American community organizers because I guarantee you could see this coming. There was so much code last night, and what they were doing was they were plowing the field for this campaign, and that phrase is going to become code to scare white people.
Oh, absolutely, and it's sort of. It made me think of how, you know, sometimes if you allow a political party, like the Republicans in this case, to define a term and make it mean something that it absolutely isn't, you lose the battle, regardless of what the term actually means.
Think
of card-carrying member of the ACLU becoming an epithet 40 years ago.
Exactly. And once they get control of that phrase, which I predict they will within a week,
then Barack Obama is going to have one hell of a time ever getting it back. He needs to grab it first.
Keep fighting it, Tom.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And please tell everybody you know, Christy, because I know you've got a lot of great connections in Washington, D.C. Christy Harvey, Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org. Thank you, Christy.
Thank you.
Coming up tomorrow on the Tom Hartman Program, Anything Goes Day, plus Senator Bernie Sanders will be with us. It's going to be a great show. Thanks so much for being with us. Don't forget, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.